Today is August the 12th. This is Kathy bringing you the news from Decatur by reading the Herald and Review for today. The headline reads, Neighbors Embrace Improvement to Equipment, Courts, and Seating. Brandon Brown has been watching the neighborhood kids flock to the newly renovated Garfield Park. We love it when we see them come up Walnut Grove and they come from Packard and Leafland, Marietta and Roosevelt Apartments, she said. We love it when we see them coming here. On Tuesday, Decatur Park District Board members and staff, community leaders and neighbors gathered near the park's new pavilion to celebrate and learn more about the additions during a ribbon-cutting ceremony. Brown lives in the area surrounding Garfield Park and is also a member of the Neighborhood United. She has watched the new basketball courts fill with kids ready to play. And the younger kids are definitely using all of the playground equipment, Brown said. Sometimes I have to give the younger kids a push on the swings because their friends are busy. And I have shot a couple of hoops. Robert Calmees, 33, was found shooting a few baskets during the ribbon-cutting ceremony. He often encourages the neighbor kids to join him and his children. They really like this court and the glass rims. You can see them in gyms, the former Eisenhower High School basketball player said. This new court material is better than the previous solid concrete, Calmees said. It's better for the knees, he added. The concrete will tear you up faster. This will probably just feel like a rug burn. Clay Gerhardt, the park's district executive director, said the park had been a popular destination even with the older facilities and equipment, and he expects interest to grow with the upgrades. Garfield Park was stripped of old equipment, basketball courts, seating, and sidewalks. However, preserving the old pavilion was important to the board and staff. Rather than tearing it down and starting over, we invested in it, Gerhardt said. The pavilion received significant improvements, including ADA accessible restrooms and electrical services. A second pavilion was added to the park. We want Garfield Park to be a place where people come together and promote community, Gerhardt said. Having multiple people gather in different spaces helps us do exactly that. Updates also included sidewalks and cameras. Interactive technology was an exciting addition, too. The ball wall offers games selected through a phone app or by pushing a button on the side of the equipment. Any ball can be used, including baseballs, soccer balls, and footballs. It creates a completely different recreational experience than anything we've offered in our parks before, Gerhardt said. Next door to Garfield Park, the former Garfield School is undergoing its own transformation into an apartment complex for those aged 55 and older. If you put all that investment together with what happened here at Garfield Park, we're doing more than improving individual properties, Gerhardt said. We're investing in a much-needed neighborhood. Chris Harrison, president of the Decatur Park Board of Commissioners, was joined by other members of the board, with the exception of one noticeable absence. Commissioner Bob Brilley passed away on June 27th. This was an important one to him, Harrison said. According to his fellow board members and park district staff, parks need to have playing children. In the Park Board's capital plan, Garfield Park was a priority. After grants, donations, and other investments, $1.4 million was used in the transformation of the park. The next generation was a focus during the renovations of Garfield Park. We knew this park needed more than just a few improvements here and there, Gerhardt said. A few years ago, the Park Board hosted brainstorming sessions with the neighbors. The input that they gave just helped shape everything that you see here today, Gerhardt said. Brown was one of the neighbors who offered advice and voiced her preferences. We wanted a place where seniors could walk, she said, and they, for the most part, fulfilled that. And for more information, you can contact Danette Beckett at 217-421-6983. In a significant sports item, Eisenhower cancels varsity. Panthers football will play JV only this season. By Danette Beckett. Eisenhower High School's varsity 2026 football season has been canceled. Sam Knox, assistant executive director with the IHSA, said Eisenhower High School administrators contacted him on Monday to cancel the varsity season. The school confirmed it in a Facebook post on Monday late afternoon. Eisenhower has approximately 25 players out for the team this year. That's freshmen through seniors, Knox said. The Panthers will play their junior varsity schedule. Knox said Eisenhower may also play some freshman games if they could get them scheduled. A post from Eisenhower's Facebook account stated, Decatur Public Schools No. 61 announces that Eisenhower High School will not field a varsity football team for the 2026 season due to low participation numbers and concern for student safety. The school's junior varsity football program will continue as scheduled, providing student athletes with the opportunity to participate and develop within the program. Area teams Mount Zion, MacArthur, and Lincoln, as well as the rest of the team on Eisenhower's schedule, will either attempt to fill the opening on their schedule, which will be difficult with the season beginning on Friday, August 21st, or take a forfeit win. And under health care, medication sparks new sense of hope. Patients receiving experimental drug for pancreatic cancer by Lisa Schenker. When she heard about a new experimental drug to treat pancreatic cancer, Rachel Gardner tried not to get her hopes up. She wondered, would she be eligible for the medication? Would her hospital be allowed to give it to her? Or would she live long enough to get it? In late July, her questions were answered. In an exam room at City of Hope Cancer Center in Chicago, Gardner shook three light blue pills out of a bottle and, sipping water, swallowed them one at a time. To good health and getting rid of that cancer bug, Gardner exclaimed cheerfully after downing the last pill. Gardner, a 59-year-old Milwaukee teacher for students who are visually impaired, said the medication has given her a new sense of hope. Gardner is one of dozens of patients in Illinois and across the country who in recent weeks have started receiving the experimental medication, which has been heralded as a breakthrough. The drug, called daroxanrasib, does not cure pancreatic cancer, which is one of the deadliest and most difficult to treat cancers, but it gives many patients the next best thing, more time. Typically, once pancreatic cancer spreads in the body beyond the pancreas, patients may only have months to live. But in a recent clinical trial, the drug was given to patients with metastatic pancreatic cancer who had already undergone a previous treatment, and those patients lived for a median of about 13 months after being enrolled in the study, compared with the median of about 6 months for patients who had additional chemotherapy instead of daroxanrasib. Dr. Evan Pisick, a medical oncologist at City of Hope Cancer Center in Chicago, called it the biggest advance in treating pancreatic cancer in decades. This is honestly a game changer, Pisick said. This is the thing that changes what we can offer patients. It's the first targeted therapy we're able to offer them and the first other thing than just giving chemotherapy. The drug has not yet been approved by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, but the FDA is allowing drug manufacturer Revolution Medicines to give the medication to eligible patients with metastatic pancreatic cancer who've already tried other treatments under an expanded access program. Physicians must submit requests for the medication to Revolution for individual patients. The drug is provided by the manufacturer at no cost to patients who are part of the expanded access program. It gives patients an advantage to not have to sit around and wait, because a lot of them don't have that kind of time, Pisick said, of the expanded access program. At the City of Hope Cancer Center in Chicago, Gardner is one of 7 or 8 patients beginning to receive the drug, Pisick said. Other Illinois health systems that have started giving medication to patients in recent weeks under the expanded access program include Advocate Healthcare, OSF Healthcare, Endeavor Health, and University of Chicago Medicine. UChicago Medicine was also a clinical trial site for a recent study of the medication. The drug's ability to lengthen the lives of patients who have tried other treatments is unprecedented in pancreatic cancer, said Dr. Artemin Shergill, a medical oncologist and lead investigator of the clinical trial at UChicago Medicine. In oncology, we are trying to help patients live longer, Shergill said. If you can extend life, that is golden. That's the goal of treating metastatic diseases, Shergill said. Patients also reported in the study that their pain, appetite, and energy were better with daroxanrasib compared with chemotherapy. One of the patients who received the drug through UChicago Medicine, Mary Louise McAdams, 84, of Bronzeville, said she was initially told she probably had about 6 months to a year to live when she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer in 2024. She said she underwent chemotherapy and radiation, but treatment was rough on her body. At one point, she said she had to be hospitalized because of side effects. When she learned she could get the new drug through the expanded access program, she thought it sounded promising and wanted to give it a try. McAdams has now been on daroxanrasib for about 2 weeks. I hope I can prolong my life more. I don't know how long, but rather than 6 months to a year longer, I'd like to live as long as possible, as long as I'm functional and able to contribute to my care somewhat. I'm looking forward to some more years of life with my children and grandchildren, said McAdams, who has 5 children and 4 grandchildren. Gardner, who took her medication at City of Hope Cancer Center, Chicago and Zion in late July, said she never imagined 3 years ago when she was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer that a new drug might help her live longer. At that time, Gardner didn't realize anything was amiss until she developed a strange rash on her arms and chest. An urgent care center sent her home with prednisone and Benadryl to clear up the rash, she said. But the rash didn't improve, and she developed jaundice. So she underwent more testing that revealed problems with her liver and gallbladder. Ultimately, she was diagnosed with stage 1 pancreatic cancer. She and her fiancé were sitting at their kitchen table when she got the call. We looked at each other and started crying, Gardner said. She said she thought, I'm just going to die now. What do we do? At a different hospital, Gardner underwent months of difficult chemotherapy and then a complex surgery called the Whipple procedure, which involves removing the head of the pancreas, part of the small intestine, and the gallbladder and bile duct. She said she was then told to get more chemotherapy and at that point decided to seek opinions from other hospitals, including City of Hope Cancer Center, Chicago. She was impressed with the hospital and Pisick decided to stay. For a time, there was no evidence of the disease in her body. It held off until spring of 2024 when she came back at stage 4, she said. She began a different type of chemotherapy and underwent radiation treatment earlier this year. By May of this year, however, doctors told her that the chemotherapy and radiation would no longer work for her. Basically, I'm going home for the cancer to beat me, Gardner said. I'm like, nope, not going to do it. Supporting her conviction was news that the City of Hope Cancer Center Chicago was applying to get Dalroxon-Rasib for her and other patients. Gardner's experience shows the importance of clinical research, said Robert Stone, CEO of City of Hope, which has cancer centers in Illinois, California, Georgia, and Arizona. It takes so long at times to have therapies work their way through the regulatory system, and discovery is happening so fast that at times clinical trials and expanded access programs are the best treatment option for patients. And this is a perfect example, Stone said. Now that Gardner has received the medication, which has to be taken every day, she's optimistic about the year to come. She hopes the pills will give her more time. More time to go on road trips and try new restaurants with her fiancé. More time to teach. More time to spend with her 2 grown sons and their little grandnieces and grandnephews who call her Auntie Gaga. There's hope out there, Gardner said. And also on the front page, Pritzker and Bailey court the farmers. Gubernatorial rivals address estate taxes, weigh the data center development rules. And there's a picture here of Pritzker talking to Ross Polly. After the Illinois Agriculture Legislative Roundtable Forum at Funk Farms Trust in Shirley. The future expansion of large-scale data centers and the status of efforts make more Illinois farmers eligible for estate tax exemptions were among the topics Governor J.B. Pritzker and Republican challenger Darren Bailey addressed during a candidate forum. The 2 candidates, who also squared off in the 2022 election, visited Funk Farms Trust near Shirley at different times, Monday afternoon to take questions from the media and from the event's hosting organization, the Illinois Agriculture Legislative Roundtable. The event was moderated by Illinois Farm Bureau President Philip Nelson, who also asked both candidates how they felt about raising the state's estate tax threshold for family farms. Illinois' estate tax is regulated by the Illinois Attorney General's office and is paid out of all estates before their assets are transferred to intended beneficiaries and heirs. The tax is graduated and can be as high as 16%. Under current law, taxes must be paid on the entire estate if it is valued above $4 million threshold. In comparison, the federal estate tax, which is also paid by the deceased person's estate before assets can be distributed to the heir or beneficiary, currently has an exemption of $15 million per individual and $30 million per married couple. Recent bipartisan efforts have attempted to increase the state threshold to $6 million, but none has made it to the governor's desk. Opponents have questioned the potential loss of state revenue. Pritzker, who was in venture capital in Chicago for decades before beginning his political career, said he will support this legislation. It's time for us to make sure that farmers are able to hand their farms over through the generations as we have been over many generations up to now, and do it with less tax on that transfer, he said. Bailey proposed raising the threshold to the federal level to help preserve the future of farming, which he said seems to be disappearing every week. How long do we continue to work and to build when only it comes time to give the government back way too much? Bailey asked. How long are we going to sit idly by and watch our property taxes continue to escalate out of control? Bailey, a third-generation farmer born in Louisville, who has served on the Illinois Senate since 2021 and previously served in the Illinois House, said he was notified of two generational farms in the area that were recently sold because the children didn't see a future in agriculture and were frustrated. The candidates were also invited to discuss data centers, which face criticism for straining water supplies and driving up demand and cost for electricity. Nelson said there were three centers surrounding his home, taking a total of 2,700 acres of farmland out of action. The General Assembly did not pass the Protect Our Water and Energy Resources Act during the spring session. This bill would have mandated the most water-efficient cooling methods and used closed-loop systems as a baseline. It also would have required a data center use at least 80% clean energy and 25% clean backup resources. Centers would also be forced to pay annual fees, depending on the facility size, into a public fund for local utility bill assistance. Pritzker said smaller data centers were offered the opportunity to develop in Illinois around 2020, which was before hyperscale centers were first introduced. But when those larger projects came forward, Pritzker said he eliminated the tax credits and benefits available for those projects. Although Pritzker said the state needs to set some standard for large-scale projects that ensure that residents' power bills will not be affected, he also stated that local governments should make their own decisions about whether they want one. You have those decisions to make with zoning and other things when you have a new business that comes to your city, your township, or your county, Pritzker said. You should have that same decision-making ability with a data center that comes to you. Bailey said the state should not give billion-dollar companies massive tax incentives when all it does is force homeowners' taxes to go up. The state should insist that data centers provide their own energy and water, he added. Bailey also reiterated claims he made on social media that Pritzker benefited from a data center project in DeKalb through his blind trust. As a livestock producer, if I want to expand my operation, we have to have nutrient management plans, Bailey said. You've got to have setbacks, you've got to go through public hearings, and it seems like we're bypassing a lot of that as a race to who can sign their data center first. And this article was written by Drew Zimmerman. This front page headline, Head Start Changes Face Bipartisan Fears, by Zachary Shimermale. The Trump administration's drastic deregulation of Head Start, a preschool and child care program that's helped tens of millions of low-income kids, is generating bipartisan pushback in Congress. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced August 5th that his agency is pursuing a sweeping rollback of much more than 100 pages of federal rules governing the multi-billion-dollar program. Among the items on the chopping block are requirements to conduct screenings for kids with disabilities, keep class sizes small, help children brush their teeth daily, and mandate monitors on school buses. Pay parity rules for staff and ban on expelling students would go by the wayside, too. Senate Republicans have expressed wariness in recent days about the prospect of slashing these standards, which advocates say help keep kids safe and healthy. We've been hearing from our Head Start folks back home that are concerned about what they're seeing, Senator Lisa Murkowski, Republican of Alaska, told USA Today. That's something we're monitoring. Senator Tom Tillis, Republican of North Carolina, said he explored reforms to Head Start at the state level when he was Speaker of his state's legislature years ago, but he appeared skeptical of the merits of a deregulation that's too broad, just like turning away and walking away and turning a blind eye toward it. I don't think that'd be a good idea, he told USA Today. The worries in the GOP are significant, especially given that meaningful pushback on Capitol Hill, particularly from key Republicans in the Senate, can become one of the most effective forms of resistance to Trump administration policies. Similar objections among people like Senator Susan Collins, a Maine Republican, and the powerful chair of the Senate Appropriations Committee, to completely eliminating Head Start were arguably what ultimately saved it last year. Senator Jim Justice, Republican of West Virginia, cautioned that though he supports making improvements to the program, it's already helping a lot of kids who benefit phenomenally. When we start tweaking with stuff, a lot of times we can make it better, he said in a brief interview, but there are ways we can make it worse too. In Kennedy's eyes, the new effort will streamline Head Start, which serves hundreds of thousands of low-income families annually, and cut red tape, all while expanding the number of enrolled kids. Alex Adams, one of Kennedy's deputies who runs an HHS division called the Administration for Children and Families, stressed on a recent call with reporters that Head Start providers will still be subject to state and local regulations. Just because they'll have fewer federal rules to follow doesn't mean they should ignore what works for them, he said. Flexibility is permission. It's not a mandate, he said. Democrats bristled at that notion. They're saying they might be able to serve more children by promising each child less, Senator Patty Murray, Democrat of Washington, said. President Trump has all but declared war on Head Start. Senator Bill Cassidy, the chairman of the State Senate Health and Education Committee, which has jurisdiction over Head Start, said he's been talking with his staff about the major proposed regulatory changes. In the thick of a political fight to confirm Todd Blanchett as Attorney General, he said on August 6th he hadn't fully delved into them yet. I'd like to see what they actually put out, he told USA Today. The 75-page proposed rule, officially published August 7th in the Federal Register, isn't all deregulations. It includes new rules, too. English would become the main language of instruction, and kids with a different first language would need to learn it while enrolled. There are also fresh dietary guidelines and an exercise directive, 30 minutes of physical activity for every 3.5 hours of classroom instruction. The regulatory process is still in its early stages, though, and the proposal may get tied up in court. Kerry Garvin, who ran the Office of Head Start in the Biden administration, stressed that there will be a 60-day public comment period. His message to any concerned families or teachers, there is still an opportunity for their voices to be heard. No one should surrender and feel like, well, all is done, he said. And this headline for Central Illinois, deadline looms for storm loan assistance. H&R staff, Washington. The U.S. Small Business Administration is reminding eligible businesses, private nonprofit organizations, homeowners, and renters in Illinois of the September deadline to apply for low-interest federal disaster loans to offset physical damage caused by severe storms and tornadoes occurring on June 17th. The declaration covers Illinois counties of Clark, Clay, Coles, Cumberland, Douglas, Edgar, Effingham, Fayette, Jasper, Moultrie, and Shelby, which are eligible for both physical damage loans and economic injury disaster loans from the SBA. Businesses and private nonprofits are eligible to apply for business physical disaster loans and may borrow up to $2 million to repair or replace disaster damaged or destroyed real estate, machinery and equipment, inventory, and other business assets. Homeowners and renters are eligible to apply for home and personal property loans and may borrow up to $100,000 to replace or repair personal property, such as clothing, furniture, cars, and appliances. Homeowners may apply for up to $500,000 to replace or repair their primary residence. Applicants may also be eligible for a loan increase of up to 20% of their physical damage as verified by SBA for mitigation purposes. Eligible mitigation improvements include strengthening structures to protect against high wind damage, upgrading to wind-rated garage doors, and installing a safe room or storm shelter to help protect property and occupants from future damage. Interest rates are low as 4% for businesses, 3.625% for nonprofits, and 2.875% for homeowners and renters, with terms of up to 30 years. Interest does not begin to accrue, and payments are not due until 12 months from the date of the first loan disbursement. SBA determines eligibility and sets loan amounts and terms based on each applicant's financial condition. To apply online, visit sba.gov/disaster. Applicants may also call SBA's Customer Service Center at 800-659-2955 or email disastercustomer-service@sba.gov for more information on SBA disaster assistance. For people who are deaf, hard of hearing, or have a speech disability, please dial 711 to access telecommunications relay services. The filing deadline to return applications for physical property damage is September the 8th. The deadline to return economic injury applications is April 12th. However, after that deadline has passed, there is a 60-day grace period in which SBA will accept applications. From the UN, heat wave frequency intensity up by Olivia de Poitvin, Reuters, Geneva. Periods of extreme heat are becoming more frequent, intense, and longer lasting as climate change warms the planet, the UN Weather Agency said Tuesday, noting changes since the famously hot European summer of 1976. Parts of Europe are enduring their fifth heat wave of a summer, marked by drought, wildfires, and record-breaking temperatures. Extreme heat is becoming more frequent, more intense. It's lasting longer and covering much wider areas than in the cooler climates of the past, John Kennedy, the World Meteorological Organization's head of climate information, told a news briefing in Geneva. Kennedy said the current pattern of heat across Europe, the world's fastest warming continent, reflected the interaction between persistent pattern of high-pressure systems across the northern hemisphere and a warmer climate. The high-pressure systems trap warm air, reducing cloud cover and block cooler air from moving in, allowing heat to build over large regions for days or weeks. El Niño, the naturally occurring climate pattern that typically boosts global temperatures, isn't contributing to Europe's heat this year because conditions in the tropic Pacific are currently neutral, he added. Kennedy noted that June 1976 featured a broadly similar pattern of high and low pressure systems to those seen this year, but said the outcomes were very different because of decades of global warming. The picture for 1976 is one of a few isolated areas above average temperatures in a much cooler world, he said, whereas today the picture is reversed, with much of the globe experiencing above average temperatures and only a few isolated cooler regions. Exceptionally warm seas and parched soils amplify temperatures across Europe, Kennedy said. Marine heat waves in the Mediterranean Sea and waters west of Europe are fueling hotter conditions on land by providing additional background warmth for persistent high-pressure systems, he added. Dry ground is also intensifying the heat because soils warm more quickly once moisture is depleted. Lots of these factors are coming together to give us the record heat that we're seeing this year, Kennedy stated. And also from Reuters, study, dogs spot emotions in a human face. A peek inside dogs' brains revealed man's best friend can distinguish emotions in people's faces, researchers at the University of Vienna found, providing what they said is the first evidence of such an ability. In the study, researchers used machine learning to analyze brain scans of 12 dogs as the animals viewed images of human faces displaying different emotions, the university said in news release. Researchers found that brain regions linked to higher cognitive functions and reward processing, the temporal cortex and caudate nucleus, were activated only by images of happy strangers. Anger, fear, and sadness did not trigger those regions, according to the study, published in Cell Press Journal's iScience on Monday. However, when the researchers looked at the whole brain, they found distinct activity patterns that differentiated fear from anger and sadness, providing the first evidence that dogs can distinguish specific negative facial expressions. Dogs have evolved with us to understand our expressions and cooperate with us and recognize that can change how we communicate with and care for them, senior author Laura Kuiyai said. The researchers next plan to investigate how dogs integrate other cues, including body language, voice nuances, and scent, to interpret the humans around them. They also hope to compare how human and canine brains process the same emotional signals. The researchers added that participants in the study were all pets from loving families and cautioned that dogs outside such environments may respond to human emotional cues differently. Oh, that's interesting. That's about it for today for the first half of the news of the Herald and Review for Decatur. I'll be back with the second half in about 2 minutes.